we're very excited about it because, you know, it's one of the few tools that any citizen can jump on to the web and start contacting their elected officials without party affiliation, without having to check off a box that you support a certain issue.
Right.
And we also don't ask people to send specific letters. If they want to send a communication, it's their words, not ours.
And the platform has really evolved beyond just that. Now it's a whole bunch of things.
It really is. And when we first started, the idea was trying to make the average person be almost equal to corporations in terms of access and power. And when we completed that part, we started looking at how could the applications that we'd created using this open source platform be utilized by corporations and trade associations. So to that end, we added in several layers.
And we've heard a lot of conversations about sites like GovLoop and things. That's not really, you're not going up against them. This is sort of focused on creating a platform where everyone can come, not just government, but citizens. This is an outward-facing kind of site.
Exactly. In fact, I don't really see that as of right now we have any quote-unquote competition. We're trying to provide free and open access to every citizen of this country. In fact, I look at websites like GovLoop as complementary, that we are all helping each other and helping the citizens of this country understand what's being talked about and allowing a large amount of information to be transferred in a very efficient way.
And creating sort of a platform. Everyone at Gov 2.0 Summit, there's been a lot of talk about platforms, building platforms.
Sure.
This is sort of a platform for people to carry on discussions with their elected leaders or with their government.
Sure. And to that end, we do call it a platform. In fact, we call it a platform as a service. And we created a platform where people or individuals or groups could come in and lobby on their own behalf. It without charging any money for that.
Give me your sense coming, you've spent a couple days at the Government 2.0 Summit. What are some of the tidbits? What are some of the things that particularly piqued your interest? What was your lessons learned that you came out of there from?
There's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of energy right now, but there's also a lot of confusion. I think that there's so many different applications of some of these tools. And so we're all just beginning to discover some of these applications. And I think what's really most interesting to me is the discussion between what could be happening and what's already happening right now. And to that end, I point to our own website. You know, we're already operating as a Government 2.0 website. There's a lot of companies out there that are talking about what they're going to do. And the government obviously is in sort of the discussion phase of what's going to be talking about. But right now, I think there's a real dichotomy between what already is happening, what's already existing and is being rolled out, and the things that are just ideas.
And it's been just fascinating to me to see all these people. I mean, I've been covering this stuff for a long time, and there was a long time when I was covering it, and people said, government technology, what does the government do with technology? And all of a sudden, all these people, and a lot of West Coast Silicon Valley types, are all of a sudden saying, hey, government, there's a lot of interesting things that can be applied when you apply technology to some of these fascinating problems.
Yeah, I agree. And as someone who lives on the West Coast, not in Silicon Valley,
right.
There's a lot of energy, I think, on both coasts right now. There's a lot of excitement because we're all seeing the costs of not running government efficiently, especially in California, where we're now the case study of what not to do in terms of running a government. I think that the open government solutions in these platforms are giving the governments an opportunity to say, you know what, the old way of doing business may not work anymore. And maybe it's time that the people are demanding that we actually make a change and we have to listen to them for once.
And a lot of this is going on internally for sort of continental U.S. stuff. But there's also a lot of discussion, and I've been watching the tweet streams, and a lot of discussion about the G8 summit was going on and whether there could almost be some kind of social networking platform sort of around those kinds of events and situations.
And, you know, that's a very interesting point, because one of the things that has been going on, especially around those global summits, the G5, G7, G20, other summits, is that there's a feeling that these countries that hold the summits are very inclusive, that they're not, they're very exclusive,
right.
And they're not including enough people. That's a very, very small group of diplomats.
Feels
and
like
ministers.
It's over there, or, you know.
Exactly. And so what's being explored now are ways in which social networks could be used to allow citizens to contribute their ideas and allow ministers to reach outside the envelope a little bit during these conferences and actually get some real-time feedback from people in their own country about what's going on. And there's a lot of movement towards that. We're working on some projects with that as well. It's very exciting. It's a very exciting time right now.
And the thing that is repeatedly amazing to me, I know the guy who heads Australia's Government 2.0 initiative was at the summit. And this is just everyone's facing, all governments around the world, sort of regardless of level, everyone's facing these challenges.
Well, I agree. I think there are challenges and opportunities at the same time, in that especially because the technology has flattened all of our ability to get access to information, makes everything much more real time. And the idea of governments sort of having these databases that nobody could access except them, those days are over.
Yeah.
And the idea that governments can operate in secrecy or total secrecy, those days are also over, unless you're North Korea.
North Korea, or yeah, exactly. Even Iran has been forced open. Technology has even done such interesting things. So it's amazing how it just finds a way.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot of people are starting to look at the term social networking in a very different way, because for the last several years, social networking has sort of been associated with people talking about their dates or their friends or what they had for dinner last night. But now social networks are being used in large institutions. Harvard, for example, is using Joomla as their intranet. Citibank is using Joomla as their intranet. And we're seeing an explosion of business uses coming out of what is social networking. And I have a feeling that the term social networking is going to change into something else.
And Andrew McAfee, the Harvard Business School guy, the guy who created the term Enterprise 2.0, says he doesn't like the term social networking because it almost degrades what these applications actually do. It is actually Enterprise 2.0.
It's an excellent point.
It's a platform for doing real work, and social networking makes it sound sort of frivolous.
And I also think that what's happening now is that businesses and governments have had a year or two to start to look at some of these technologies and start to understand really, how is this going to affect our operations and our ability to deal with our constituents and other, players in our field. And one of the things that's happening is, in addition to the real-time technology transfer, real-time information transfer that's occurring, the other thing that's happening is governments and businesses are learning how to become more efficient simply by applying these new tools. They don't have to change any of their other processes in many instances.
And what do you sense is the big challenge out there? I mean, two that strike me. One is certainly security. The security issue still is out there, and feds are very, very cognizant of security. The other one is just these culture things, people hanging on to, the old ways of doing business because that's the way we've always done it.
Well, I think on the security question, I mean, clearly that's always going to be with us. No matter how advanced we get on a security level, the bad guys are always going to try and stay one step ahead. And so that's clearly an ongoing concern. However, if you look at the way open source platforms are created, there's an argument to be made that they actually could be made more secure because of the built-in compartmentalization of these types of platforms that many of the traditional software platforms do not have. Once you're in a sort of more traditional software format, you're in.
Yeah.
But in open source, you might only be in one module, and then you can't get out. You're kind of stuck. But I do think security is a huge issue, will remain a huge issue for a long time to come.
And a lot of concern, with Twitter occasionally having issues and stuff like that. And it's not just Twitter, all of them do. Like, hold on, if we become so dependent on that one, then does it change? But it seems like, it's in the end, it's not that hard to move over. And
right, I agree. And also, but on the cultural issues that you mentioned earlier, there's a really big cultural one, which a lot of people don't talk about too much, but became... to me, the biggest thing that I got out of the Open Government Innovations Conference in D.C. a couple months ago, which was that we're, for the first time, I think, in a very long time, we're facing a generational shift, where instead of the young learning from the old and being mentored from the old, it's the opposite. The old are being mentored from the young, and the young are in a position where they have to teach their bosses how to do things.
Yeah.
And that's a sea change.
And I sometimes think of the kind of pressure on some of these young people, because we bring these young people in and we want them to change our entire organization. And like, hey, this is my first job. I just want to do what I do. And it must be a lot of pressure on folks.
I'm sure there is. And not to mention the fact that, whereas, even just 10 years ago, people could leave their job at work.
Yeah.
Now, it's pretty much
follows
ubiquitous.
You. Yeah.
You got your BlackBerry, your iPhone, even on vacation, you're still trying to kind of put fires out. And I think that's kind
of changed.
I wanted
an Alaska cruise to try and get away, and it followed me, for goodness sakes.
Well, hopefully you had some amusing, you know, laughs at some of the tweet streams that you got to
see.
There
you go.
But I do think that there's also another cultural shift which is occurring, which is that there's, for a long time, there have been a lot of people who've been afraid of technology. They just saw it as something that it was like the geek's paradise, and they didn't really want to have anything to do with it. But now technology has become so pervasive that I think it's forcing us on a societal level to start to think about it, like, well, we really have to actually, like, know how to use these things just to function in society.